We'll continue that format. That's what I've designed for the day. No offense, but you don't have to listen to me drone on, you know, so that's better. And I think the practical application is good. And frankly, that practical application is one of those things that I'm talking about. We're going to move from objective informational truth to applied truth. And that's what we're doing here. If you look at these questions, most of the time when you have questions or activities, it's like, okay, tell me about Romans 2:3 and give me an interpretation of it. A lot of times we don't get to applied truth. And so notice the questions, notice what I'm doing. I'm walking you through an experience where you're hopefully experiencing what we're talking about and you're applying things in a very real way. Well, Matthew 6, 22 to 24, the lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Now, this verse is not talking about a physical eye. I think you know that, but I'm just making an obvious statement here. It's not talking about a physical eye, but a point of view or a spiritual filter. Now, a modern word often used for this filter is worldview. How many have heard about worldview? How many have done extensive work on a Christian worldview? You know, we walk that through, and it's like, okay, I've got to get my intellectual thinking lined up with a Christian worldview. Well, how about a different question? Even if your intellectual thinking is lined up, how about your heart? How often does your heart go into jealousy or bitterness or envy or rage or etc.? How is your heart lined up? Maybe worldview isn't the right word there, but a spiritual picture, image of Christ. And so be thinking about that. Is a miser's decision driven by his thinking? Or is it his deeper desires? I'm telling you, what you care about deeply, what you desire, it's a driver. We've got to learn, we need to know our own driver so that we have an idea of what that filter looks like that's continually going on with us. One of the things I had to learn that not everybody wants to do information the way I do information. First time I did, I love retreats. I love intensive retreats. First time I did a retreat, those poor people, they walked out there. We did a Friday evening, like 7 to 10. We did Saturday, and they didn't get hardly any breaks. We did Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. These people deserve trophies. I mean, they walked out there kind of like, okay, you know. I learned a little bit from that one. I cut the material in half for the next retreat. To tell you how much of an overkill. Why? I've got that teacher. I've got that thirst for knowledge. And I think everybody else should have it. I think everybody else should be operating at the same level I am. You know, and it's kind of like, doesn't really work that way. So we tend to project our drivers and stuff on other people. Most people's filters are not in place because of their thoughts. Let's get the order the right way. Their thoughts are in place because of their filters. How many of you look around at people and you're just like shocked at what people are believing? Anybody been there? Well, throw the word information feeds in and you put filters and you put core desires and you put cultural backdrop and you know, you put all these pieces together, and why in the world are we shocked at the way people are thinking? You know, at some point it's kind of like, no offense, but it's like, well, of course you think that way. With the way our culture is speaking to people and it's shaped. I mean, think about this. You show up at church for a few minutes a week, if that, and you got 24/7 all the rest of the week. What is shaping your heart? And you are being shaped at a heart level. I mean, you have to know, and if you don't know, I'll tell you, what's the number one driver in our culture today? And I can say it two different ways. Pleasure or avoidance of pain. And they're both the same thing. A lot of times I deal with what I call heads and tails. But our culture has become absolutely driven by, I do not want to experience pain, so delayed gratification's out the door, and so we absolutely have to completely stop and avoid all pain. And on top of that, you know, I mean, the God that we teach, in order to attract people, the God that we teach is an unending pleasure God who there is no pain. I mean, death to self kind of gets thrown out the back door, and it's kind of like, well, we won't talk about death to self. We're just going to tell you how wonderful God is and how he's going to answer your prayers, and life is just going to be fixed, and et cetera. And we might get to death to self a little bit later. A lot of times we're virtually selling the gospel just like we would sell a hamburger. And in the end, that comes back to bite us. Truth is needed to clean up these filters, but not just doctrinal truth, applied truth. Now, we're going to talk about that, and we'll get a better understanding of that. Proverbs 16:2, all the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Don't you love that language? How many of us hear that? We don't hear that. It doesn't say weighs the thoughts. He weighs the spirits. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the... And these two are largely interactive. He weighs the hearts. So you've got spirit, you've got heart, and they're paralleled in these verses. But notice the first part. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes. From your point of view, from your filter, every way of yours is objective truth. Every way of yours is pure in your own eyes. Tell me that's not going on in our culture in multiplied fashion. We have no humility. We have no understanding of what I'm going to talk about here in the next line is our blindness. Because of ego, and what's ego? I'll just define it a way. This isn't the way, but a way. Wanting to feel good about ourselves. I know we wake up wanting to feel good about ourselves. And we're willing to do a whole lot of stuff so that we can feel good about ourselves. Sometimes stuff that we just don't want to do. So because of ego, which is wanting to feel good about ourselves, we are blind to self. Anybody else there? I mean, I'm a knowledge guy. Your pain, your deepest pain, is related to what you care about. Guess what my deepest pain point, one of my deepest pain points has been over the years? I can remember I say this, and I'm not proud of it, but I was a debater. I'm intelligent, I'm top of a class, et cetera, et cetera. So you're going to have a hard time arguing me to a point where I just submit. First 10 years of my marriage, I literally look back and I was never wrong. I don't say that. I say that with shame. I was never wrong. And then I jokingly say, and once I figured that out, the next 10 years of my marriage, I was never right. She used it to her advantage when she found out, and basically somewhere in there, I had to learn to say the infamous words, and these were words that I specifically would speak to her in very clear terms. I'm sorry, dear. Are you ready? I was wrong. You know, they're wild that it took those words to kind of wrong. But when I think about through the years, when I would actually wake up and realize I had been wrong, it was like a sucker punch. When you're a knowledge guy, you have this instinct of, man, I need to be the answer guy. Today in the ministry, working with addicts, well, guess what? It's hard to have the answers when you're working with addicts and you're dealing with intense situations. And so I've got this passion of Jesus, John chapter 17, not one will be lost. And I've got this fire in my belly that's like, we will find answers. We will find solutions. We will be able to help you. And so when I run up against a situation where I'm just blow it and I'm wrong, I can remember, especially 15, 20 years ago, I mean, it was every time that would happen, it was just like a sucker punch and it would take the wind out of me. And it was just like, and I'd be gasping for air. Wherever you feel sucker punched, that tells you what you care about at a deep level. And for me, this I was wrong, I care about knowledge, I care about understanding, I care about having answers, and it's not all egotistical and arrogant. Part of the reason I care about that is because I want to help people. So it's not like I'm just a total jerk wanting to be the smartest person running around. In fact, I don't really even care about that kind of language. The big thing that I want, I don't care about that kind of information. The big thing that I want the kind of information where I can help people get better. So when I'm working with people and when I make a mistake, and you know how often early in the ministry when I was working with addicts and alcoholics, it's like if someone would fail, if they would go back to drinking or using whatever, I might not sleep for a night, two nights, three nights. Because it was such a sucker punch to me, and I was so blind to myself that I believed I had answers or should have answers, and I took responsibility for things that... How blind are you, David? You got thousands of people spending billions of dollars trying to resolve some of these issues, and the first guy that you don't help, you think you're a fool? I mean, how arrogant, egotistical, blind, add whatever word you want to throw at me. How blind are you? We're that blind to ourselves. And the place that we are the most blind, get ready to not be happy with me, swallow a little bit hard, is the area you think you're the most expert. Because that thinking that I'm an expert causes me to not see other people, hear other people, and I tend to send bad messages in the area I feel like I have the greatest expertise. And you might even have expertise, but when you're wrong, it's a doozy. And it hurts people. And it makes a difference. And so there is a way that seems right to a man. That end of that way is what? Death. That's multiple scriptures. Even those who have great insight into others cannot see themselves with the same accuracy. And I tell this, and God's really gifted. He's gifted me. I've studied spiritual gifts. I've studied core values. I can literally sit down with someone and just blow them out of the water. Give me 5 minutes. Let me ask a few questions, and I'll start telling you about you. Because when you start seeing people's countenance and you start seeing their hearts, you know who they are, you just don't know the details. And so I can sit down in a group and within seconds almost be, and they're just kind of, their eyes are open and go, how'd you know that? How'd you know that? How'd you know that? There's one person in the group I can't do that with. And this causes us to be deceived, because if we're seeing other people well, we assume, I'm pretty insightful. I have objective truth. Well, you might have objective truth about anyone and everybody except yourself. And if there's one lesson that I've had to learn over the years, that no matter how much counseling I do, how much insight I can bring, when it comes to me, I don't have it. And so that's a powerful truth for you to get a hold of. And when you start understanding that, let me tell you, your countenance and the way you approach people will change just because you believe these statements. When these statements really soak into you, it creates a whole different level of humility in your approach to people. And what do we have now? We have two sides that are speaking from a very authoritarian point of view of I am right and you're foolish and you're stupid and you're wrong. And that whole authoritarian approach immediately just alienates entire sections of people that potentially could have been reached. At the first sign of openness, and we're going to talk about openness in the next section, this applied truth of being blind to self should be one of the first things we teach people. Now, I want to do just kind of a thing. He had in there that we would take a break at 10:15. If you don't mind, I'm going to switch this where this longer first segment's a little bit longer. Then we'll take a break and then shorter segment on the second one. So are we good? Now, you've got your questions there. So it is time for question break number two. Are you ready, set, go.